Welcome to Washington Today on this 13th day of August 2020. I'm your host, Greta Bronner. There are 82 days to go until the presidential election. President Trump today announced a peace deal his administration brokered between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. More on that in a moment. The Supreme Court on Thursday rebuffed the Republican Party and allowed a consent decree to go forward so that Rhode Island voters during the coronavirus pandemic could cast mail-in ballots without in-person witness verification. It was the first time the justices had agreed to a pandemic-related voter relief effort. But they explained in a short, unsigned order that state officials had agreed to relax the rules, and the change already had been implemented during the June primary. Former Vice President Joe Biden on Thursday called for a nationwide mask mandate to help fight the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. He said, quote, "Every American should be wearing a mask when they're outside for the next 3 months at a minimum," after a briefing with coronavirus public health experts. He was joined at the briefing by his newly named running mate, Senator Kamala Harris of California. The leader of the World Health Organization reiterated calls for countries to share resources to combat the coronavirus, urging leaders to invest in the UN agency's ACT Accelerator, a collaborative initiative to develop a vaccine, treatment, and diagnostic options. Dr. Tedros has repeatedly called on politicians to reject, quote, vaccine nationalism, and to ensure that when a viable vaccine is developed, it can be distributed globally and equitably. And the number of Americans filing for state unemployment benefits fell below 1 million last week for the first time since March. But layoffs remain exceptionally high by historical standards, even as the pace of rehiring has slowed. The Labor Department reported on Thursday that 963,000 people last week filed first-time claims for benefits under regular state unemployment programs. Another 489,000 applied under the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which covers the independent contractors, self-employed workers, and others who don't qualify for regular state unemployment insurance. At the White House today, President Trump announced a preliminary peace agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. This would make the UAE only the third Arab country to have diplomatic ties with the Jewish nation, and it would also temporarily suspend Israel's plans to annex portions of the West Bank. From the Oval Office earlier today, here's President Trump.
Well, thank you very much. This is very important. This is a big event, and I want to just congratulate all of the people standing behind me because they have done an incredible job. This is something that hasn't been done in more than 25 years. Just a few moments ago, I hosted a very special call with two friends, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed of the United Arab Emirates, where they agreed to finalize a historical peace agreement. Everybody said this would be impossible. And as you know, Mohammed is one of the great leaders of the Middle East. After 49 years, Israel and the United Arab Emirates will fully normalize their diplomatic relations. They will exchange embassies and ambassadors and begin cooperation across the board and on a broad range of areas, including tourism, education, healthcare, trade, and security. This is a truly historic moment. Not since the Israel-Jordan peace treaty was signed more than 25 years ago has so much progress been made towards peace in the Middle East. By uniting two of America's closest and most capable partners in the region, something which said could not be done, this deal is a significant step towards building a more peaceful, secure, and prosperous Middle East. Now that the ice has been broken, I expect more Arab and Muslim countries will follow the United Arab Emirates lead, and I want to just thank them for being. It's not surprising, knowing Mohammed so well, it's not surprising they are in that lead position and normalize relations with Israel. We are already discussing this with other nations, very powerful, very good nations and people that want to see peace in the Middle East.
The UAE foreign minister said in a news conference that delegations from the two countries will meet in coming weeks to sign agreements in areas such as investment, direct flights, security, and cooperation in fighting the coronavirus before eventually culminating with establishing embassies. The foreign minister could not say how long it would take, only that it would, quote, not be a long time frame. He did say that the eventual UAE embassy in Israel would not be in Jerusalem, at least not until there were final status negotiations between the Israelis and Palestinians. Later at the White House briefing, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien spoke to reporters about the deal.
It's really remarkable, I think, when you step back and take a look at what this president has done on the peace front. And it wouldn't surprise me. It'll take some time in this environment, but it wouldn't surprise me if the president's eventually nominated for a Nobel Prize for today's work is an example of why he would be rightly considered and should be a front runner for the Nobel Peace Prize.
That was National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien earlier today at the White House. President Trump's advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, said discussions between the parties started about a year and a half ago and picked up speed after the public release of the Trump peace plan in January. One catalyst at the time was the refusal of the Palestinian leadership to participate in talks for that plan and their outright rejection when it debuted. Arab leaders saw that as a green light to proceed on their own, Kushner said. You're listening to Washington Today. On to campaign 2020. Today, President Trump appeared on the Fox Business Channel with host Maria Bartiromo, who asked about Democrats and their push for a stimulus package. Here's that exchange.
What specifically are they pushing for that is causing this breakdown in any deals? Nancy Pelosi said that the Democrats want to, and the White House are still miles apart on stimulus.
Well, they're right, and it's their fault. They want $3.5 billion for something that'll turn out to be fraudulent. That's election money, basically. They want $3.5 billion for the mail-in votes. Okay, universal mail-in ballots. They want $25 billion for the post office. Now they need that money in order to have the post office work, so it can take all of these millions and millions of ballots. Now, in the meantime, they aren't getting there. By the way, those are just two items. But if they don't get those two items, that means you can't have universal mail-in voting because they're not equipped to have it. And you see how bad it's been with this Carolyn Maloney scam. She scammed her way into an election. She probably lost, but they said mail-in ballots. It's all mixed up. Patterson, New Jersey, same thing. Yesterday, Virginia, 500,000 applications for ballots. Got sent to everybody. Nobody even knows. Got sent to dogs. Got sent to dead people. Nobody has no idea what happened. They said, oh, we made a mistake. I'm sorry. 500,000 ballots sent in Virginia. How do you feel about Virginia going in there and you have 500,000 wow. phony ballot applications? And this is all over.
So I can this give is you... what's holding it up? They want...
No.
So,
that's
Mr.
only
President,
one aspect of it.
This is what's holding up money for the American people. They want mail-in votings and they want money for the post office. This is one of the sticking points that's holding back stimulus for Americans during this coronavirus.
The Democrats wanting money for the post office for mail-in voting. That's one of them. That's right. How would you like to have $3.5 billion for mail-in voting? Billion. So if you didn't have it, you wouldn't. You know how much money that is? Nobody has any idea. You know, people, they are $3.5 billion. They want $25 billion for the post office because the post office is going to have to go to town to get these great, ridiculous ballots in. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting out and voting. You get out and vote. They voted during World War I and World War II, and they should have voter ID because the Democrats scammed the system. But two of the items are the post office and the $3.5 billion for mail-in voting. Now, if we don't make a deal, that means they don't get the money. That means they can't have universal mail-in voting. They just can't have it.
That was President Trump earlier today on Fox Business. His remarks were criticized by Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Speaking at her weekly dugout with reporters, here are her remarks.
Yes, Chairman.
So on the Postal Service issue, the president's remarks yesterday about his concerns about fraud and mail, I mean, that seems to be, from his vantage point, one of the biggest sticking points in these negotiations. I mean, when you speak with Secretary Mnuchin and Meadows about $25 billion, you talk about what the Postal Service Board of Governors extended, did they tell you that that's why he's balking on that point?
I didn't say he was balking. We just found out yesterday that he was balking, but he balked before when we tried to do it in previous COVID bills. But what he's talking about has no basis in fact, has no basis in fact. So let's not validate a false claim of the president. Another false claim of the president.
Do you view that as the biggest sticking point in these negotiations?
No. We're trying to meet the needs of the American people.
No, you talk to them. They don't say that's the A number one.
Well, they are deciding what our A number one is?
No, they say this is our must-have. We can't have $25 billion for false reserves.
Okay, and so they're going to prevent children from having food, safety in the schools, people from being evicted, all of that, stopping the spread of the virus because of the Postal Service? That's what they're saying?
I'm asking you what they tell you.
You just claimed it. They've not told me that. No. No.
But what they're saying,
see, is different from what the president is saying. If they came in the room and said the president's never doing this, that's something we take to the American people. And the American people want the Postal Service protected and preserved. It's a really sad situation. But you know what? Let's all just remain calm. I've said this to you before. Take a deep breath. What's going on here? How could it be 90 days since we passed a bill? How could it be months since this virus has assaulted our health, our economy, our education, everything? And we still do not have an acceptance of the science necessary to deal with it, ignoring what could help 1.2 billion prescriptions mailed in 2019.
That was Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. We'll have more with her later in the program on the continued stalemate between Democrats and Republicans in regards to that coronavirus relief bill. And at the White House, Press Secretary Kayla McEnany again refuted claims about the security of mail-in voting and pressed reporters when asked about President Trump's remarks this morning. From the White House, here's the press secretary.
You voted by the U.S. mail. The president has voted by the U.S. mail. Many of his top people have voted by the mail. Why is he trying to prevent ordinary Americans from voting by mail?
So first, let me note, I've voted absentee. The president's voted absentee. He's always been for voting absentee for a reason. What he is not for is mass mail-in voting, or perhaps to make it even clearer, mass mail-out voting, where everyone on the voting rolls is mailed out a ballot. Voting rolls in Los Angeles County, for example, you have 117% of the county registered to vote. How does that even make sense? It doesn't. And that would mean that in the least, 17% of the ballots floating around would be subject to potential fraud. So that's what the president is standing firmly against, but he has always been for absentee for a reason.
That was Press Secretary Kayla McEnany earlier today at the White House. And in Wilmington, Delaware today, presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden and his newly minted running mate, Kamala Harris, were both asked about the coronavirus and the president's remarks. Here are their remarks to reporters from the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington.
Mr. Biden, how has the first day been with Senator Harris? Pardon? How has the first day been with Senator Harris on the campaign trail?
It's been great. And it's been great with she and her husband and Jill her husband were friends before this.
Yeah.
And have become closer friends. We had a great, great day. But we're going to talk today. I've been doing these briefings with two of the four docs up there, Dr. Laurie and Dr. Nina Smith. Are often quoted in our briefings, but this is very good joining us today. We're going to get what I get four times a week, a briefing on the state of coronavirus here and around the world and what we should and shouldn't be doing. And so it usually takes somewhere between an hour and an hour and a half. And so I just wanted to now, with the Senator, we're going to be digging in.
I'm looking forward to it. These are some of the brightest minds, not only in our country, but internationally. And as the Vice President has been saying since the beginning of this pandemic, it should be the public health professionals that are leading policy in our country to address this lethal pandemic. And so I'm very much looking forward to this briefing and to catch up with the Vice President on the briefings he's been having so far.
President Trump, thank you guys. Come on, guys.
Funding for the Postal Service, buying us mail-in voting. What do you think about that?
Pure Trump.
Okay, guys, let's go. Let's go. Fun.
You guys won an election.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Kamala Harris from earlier today in Wilmington. Politico's Zach Montalero joined us earlier to talk about mail-in voting. My first question to him focused on what the president is claiming about how mail-in voting works.
Right. So the president probably has two really big falsehoods when he talks about mail-in voting. The first is that mail-in voting is ripe for fraud. Simply put, there is no real case. There's no real proven cases of widespread electoral fraud in America, not with mail-in voting, not with in-person voting, not with early voting. Election experts and election administrators that you talk to will readily acknowledge that mail-in voting could have a slightly higher risk for fraud than in-person voting. No one denies that. But there's no cases of it actually happening in the U.S., and there's a lot of safeguards to stop it from happening. The second thing the president kind of constantly talks about that isn't really reality is that there's universal mail-in voting. Right now, we have nine states that will have some level of universal mail-in voting, meaning every voter will be mailed a ballot proactively. They don't have to request it. It'll show up in their mailbox. That won't be the case in the other 41 states, probably. Some of those states may move to that, but the majority of American voters won't have a ballot mailed directly to them. The president usually doesn't make that distinction. He usually just says mail-in voting is coming. Granted, House Democrats passed a bill that would effectively allow for universal mail-in voting in the case of emergencies, like a pandemic. But that bill won't become law, and it won't be universal mail-in voting widely across the country this cycle.
Why is he opposed to it? Do we know why?
It's a real head-scratcher. The president has outright said that he's opposed to it because he believes Republicans won't win elections. He said a while ago that if there is universal mail-in voting, that'll be the last time a Republican ever gets elected. But this evidence kind of shows that up until this cycle, at least, it was a pretty universally adapted program that it didn't benefit Republicans over Democrats. In some states, Republicans were better at turning out mail-in voters. Florida is probably the most famous example of this, that in Florida, the Republican Party down there was much better at getting their voters to return their ballots than Democrats. But studies from academics have shown that, as a whole, that's not the case. You know, that may be different this year, that instead of it being a fairly party-neutral platform, that it looks like Democrats are gravitating towards it because of the pandemic, and Republicans are moving away from it because of the president's constant drumbeat on how unsafe it is. So that may be different this year, but that's probably basically because of what the president has done, not because of the process itself.
When did Democrats pass legislation to deal with mail-in ballots?
Yeah, so Democrats' legislation that dealt with mail-in ballots was the HEROES Act. That was their opening offer for the second or third package of coronavirus relief. That was passed a couple of months ago. And again, it included a lot of things that would result in ultimately a sweeping change to the American electoral system, but that's not expected to become law.
Is this ongoing discussion between the president and Democrats part of the negotiations over aid, more economic aid, due to the pandemic?
Well, that's the thing. The president today on Fox Business seemingly said that he'd veto any bill that included, or he wouldn't support any bill that included both funding for election security. There's $3.6 billion in the House opening offer that would include not only money for mail-in voting, but money to protect polling places, to do voter education campaigns, things like that, and money for the post office. $25 billion was in the House Democrats' HEROES Act. It's part of the negotiation, I suppose, but the president has come out pretty strongly against it. He says he doesn't want to fund the post office because of mail-in voting, and it's hard to see what the negotiating platform is from that.
How are Democrats responding to this, to these remarks by the president about mail-in balloting?
Yeah, so Democrats have been responding to this kind of with outrage, kind of expected this, that, you know, the president has for a while now railed against mail-in voting, but to threaten funding the post office over it. To be clear, the president was pretty explicit about it this morning when he said that he would not support post office funding. He said he wouldn't support post office funding because that would prevent universal mail-in voting from being sent around. So that's kind of it's what Democrats have reacted most strongly to. But it's not new for the president to be railing against mail-in voting. It's a lot of the same that we've heard from since the pandemic more or less started.
What are you watching for next on this?
Well, what I'm watching for next is that regardless of what the president says, there will be pretty wide adoption of mail voting. A lot of that will be people proactively requesting the ballots themselves, not them being sent the ballots, but voters saying, hey, I want to get this ballot. We saw in primary after primary after primary that voters want to have this at least as an option, that they felt, some of them significantly feel unsafe going to the polls. That's not to say in-person voting isn't important. It absolutely is. But a lot of voters are requesting this on their own. They're not looking, they're not being sent the ballot. They're asking for it proactively. So the USPS needs to be prepared for that. And the changes that have been going on in the USPS, driven by the president's new postmaster general, is what I'm watching for, too. There's some concern that he is going to actively slow down, or that mail ballots will be slowed down, that election mail will be slowed down. He's encouraging election administrators to use first-class mail as opposed to bulk-rate mail, which is a change for a lot of them that will either cost them a lot more money or it runs the risk of the ballots and other election mail not being delivered on time.
Since the pandemic began, have we seen mail-in ballots in primaries, and how have they worked out?
Yeah, so since the pandemic began, we've seen a lot of shifts toward mail-in voting, perhaps no greater than Wisconsin, that made almost no changes to their law, but went from a very small mail-in voting participation rate to a very, very high one, somewhere in the 60 or 70%, I believe. And the majority of voters submitted absentee ballots for their spring election. It hasn't been perfect everywhere. Probably the most prominent example has been in New York, which took a very long time to count their ballots. In all of these states, or most of these states, so I should say, there's been complaints of some voters requesting absentee ballots who don't ultimately get them too. And that's a real problem. You know, a lot of these states are seeing drastic increases and they weren't prepared for this giant increase in volume. So some voters just weren't getting their ballots. So they had to go vote in person. But, you know, we haven't seen any evidence of widespread fraud like the president talked about. We haven't seen any of that. It's been more some administrative problem.
Zach Montalero with Politico. You can follow his reporting on this story if you go to politico.com. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. I'm your host, Greta Brauner. In other headlines today, the German automaker Daimler said Thursday that it had agreed to pay $2.2 billion to settle accusations that Mercedes-Benz cars and vans sold in the United States were programmed to cheat on emissions tests. The sum, which covers federal fines and a class action suit brought by owners of Mercedes vehicles, is a substantial financial hit to the company as it deals with plunging sales because of the coronavirus pandemic. The penalty is only a fraction of the more than $20 billion that Volkswagen paid in the United States to settle criminal charges and civil suits by owners and state governments after it was caught using software to dupe regulators. And veteran Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward's new book about President Trump, titled Rage, will be released September 15th, less than 2 months before the election, according to a listing on Amazon.com. Publisher Simon & Schuster says the forthcoming book follows, quote, Trump's moves as he faces a global pandemic, economic disaster, and racial unrest. It says Woodward conducted a series of exclusive interviews with the president. The Amazon listing also notes that Woodward obtained 25 personal letters between Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, including one in which Kim describes their bond as something out of, quote, a fantasy film. Back on Capitol Hill, where Speaker Nancy Pelosi held her weekly press conference with reporters, she was questioned extensively over the continued stalemate between Democrats and Republicans when it comes to a coronavirus deal. Here's Speaker Pelosi.
We are sitting here in the middle of a stalemate that's now lasted for days, and there are suggestions that Congress doesn't have another big deadline until September 30th. Can Americans wait that long for something, and how do you expect to get Republicans back to the table before that if nothing changes?
Well, first of all, let me just say we passed our bill 90 days ago. It took them until 2 weeks ago to come back with a meager piecemeal success. Bill that they put forth. They said, oh, we all work better up against a deadline. No. The virus doesn't have a deadline, and nor does it take a pause. American people don't want this uncertainty. You're always there to give certainty to the markets. Let's give some certainty to America's working families. So we can't wait until September 30th. I know some have said, well, this will, but people will die. 77,000 died since this bill. So it is, we've said to them, we're here, come $2 trillion, let's sit down and divide how we would spend that. And let's have, based on science and evidence and data and truth and fact, how we can make the biggest difference to send our children to school safely, to open our economy based on science, as well as put money in the pockets of the American people, while we honor our heroes by supporting state and local government. And They called yesterday. I said, "What do you have more money? Because it's no use. What you are, the needs of the American people are not changing. They're only getting more so. They're not lessening."
That was Speaker Nancy Pelosi earlier today on Capitol Hill. Over on the Senate side, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took his turn to state who he believes is to blame for the lack of compromise. Here's the Majority Leader.
"Unfortunately, Mr. President, the Democrats have continued to let working families down. They're still rejecting any more relief for anyone unless they get a flood of demands with no relationship to COVID-19. It's been more than 2 weeks since Senate Republicans put out a trillion-dollar plan to help America reopen, recover, and stay on offense against this virus. Republicans did the same thing that worked back in March. We set up the same process that built the unanimous CARES Act in a matter of days, laid out a strong marker built by our chairman and our committees, fitted to real, fact-based needs of our nation, and then invited the Democrats to negotiate. We want another round of direct cash payments for American families. We want to send $105 billion to help schools and universities safely reopen, and billions more to help working parents with child care. We want to create new incentives for retaining and rehiring American workers and for businesses to improve workplace safety. We want to create the smart legal protections that small businesses and university presidents are pleading for so they can reopen safely for students and workers without paying a ransom to the trial lawyers. These are the strong policies we proposed because these are the policies our nation actually needs. We want to take second runs at the best and most successful parts of the bipartisan CARES Act while adding in bold new steps for this new phase for our nation's battle."
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Capitol Hill earlier today. Remember, you can always watch the Senate on C-SPAN 2 when they are in session. Finally today, we're only days away from the state of the Democratic National Convention. And while it will look a little different this year due to the coronavirus, strategists on both sides are working to win the election come this November. C-SPAN's Steve Scully talked with Trump 2020 campaign senior advisor Mercedes Schlapp for this week's edition of The Weekly.
And speaking of being out there, the president in the coming week will be in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Arizona, and in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Joe Biden's hometown, during the week of the Democratic convention. What's the strategy?
You know, I think we feel very strongly, and I know that for Joe Biden, he has done a lot of his events are virtual. He doesn't really go anywhere, and we really see very little of Joe Biden. He doesn't take the tough questions. He doesn't, you know, he's maybe taken about, I don't know, close to 50 questions since mid-July compared to the president, taking about over 449 questions. I think that there's a reality here that the president feels very strongly that he needs to be out there with the American people and being able to talk about what he's been able to accomplish these 3.5 years, obviously talk about the coronavirus situation that's impacting all of us. And how are we going to get through this together as a nation? And what do we see America in the next 4 years? And I think it's going to be a message of hope. It's going to be a message of ensuring that Americans can get back to work, that children can get back to school safely, that we're able to find, the vaccine we need and get us on the right track when it comes to with coronavirus. That's where I think the president's going to be able to talk about it. You know, obviously contrast that with the Joe Biden very weak economic record and his coziness to China and the fact that what the policies that they are pushing would actually hurt our economy, hurt American workers, and hurt our families. So that's why I think the president, you know, he's going to go into these battleground states. He feels strongly that he needs to be out there to ensure that the voters know that he's fighting for them every day.
That was Mercedes Schlapp in this edition of The Weekly. You can find the entire podcast tomorrow wherever you listen to podcasts. That's it for today's Washington Today. If you've missed any part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it by searching Washington Today wherever you get your podcasts, or go to the website cspan.org/podcasts. Have a great evening.